Thanks, everybody, for joining us today for Kyle's franchisor client presentation on ERS. So, Kyle, go ahead and take it away.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you sound great.
Okay, very good. So ERS is Electronic Restoration Services. I'm here to talk about it mainly because I had a really good interaction when I was doing a deal with a client in 2014. This was a client who's I've remained in contact with, and I've actually asked for some of his thoughts too on that. So some of the information I have is based on my client's impressions, and that's kind of important because there were some key differentiators there. At the time when I was working with Electronic Restoration Services, I was working with Steve Lagenis. We had wide open territories in Central Texas, and they're very large. And if I could go into, first of all, I'd like to understand if anybody had any specific questions about ERS that we should be addressing before I get into it. I'd like to make note of those. Does anybody have anything that they want in particular covered? No?
Kyle?
Yes.
This is Harriet.
Hi.
Hi.
Harriet, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Thank you for doing this.
Sure.
I guess for me, where the differentiators would be between this and a cell phone repair that's expanding into repairing other types of devices, and whether you would show those two concepts to the same person or is it completely different?
Okay. That's a good question. I'll be sure to address it.
Thank you.
Any others? Okay. So what I'd like to do is talk about the experience that I had with my client and the ERS franchise development in general. I found it to be very smooth generally. My client's background, just give you a sense for that, he was pretty much management material, very much groomed in the high-tech industry to be in a management role. So he was looking for something that he could run from an executive model. So when I was looking at his value set and motives, he was an achiever emulator. So classic AE, really good for business, wasn't really hung up on fear, was really looking more at evaluating the opportunities. And that's kind of important because ERS, I don't think it's, really intuitively clear what it takes to run this business. On the surface, it looks like an electronics repair business, but really it's very relationship oriented. And a key success factor is being able to develop relationships with insurance adjusters. So it's a lot of reaching out to them proactively. This is definitely not the type of business where somebody who wants to sit back and wait for marketing programs to roll in warm leads, it's not going to be a good fit for that kind of person. This is somebody who's out there developing relationships. One of the things that my client David liked about this is that there was also a lack of consolidated competition in the industry. There aren't any other major players nationwide. And that another big differentiator was the size of the territories. They were very large. So two territories, for example, is what David got into. One pretty much covers the entire Austin metro area, and the other one covers the entire San Antonio metro area. And those two territories basically are from San Antonio to Georgetown, Texas. And if anybody knows about the size of that area, it's huge. So that was very appealing. Another big differentiator for my client that made the difference was its recession-resistant revenue streams. Because this business is based on insurance payouts rather than satisfying demand generated by a growing community, the money is already there waiting for bad things to happen. This is, in essence, a type of disaster recovery business. You know, when you compare that to home services, where getting things fixed is somewhat of a luxury, and when times are tough, you tend not to go there. So, you know, if you've got a broken ceiling fan and you don't want to spend the money to get it fixed, well, you don't have to. But ERS is designed to work off of insurance payouts, so the money's already there. In terms of the franchise development, what my client found and what I found too was that the ERS franchise development team was always available. Sometimes, you know, David noted that the other franchises would take days to hear back when he had questions, whereas ERS was very responsive, Steve Lagunas in particular. They were open to critical feedback as well. My client did not see that in the other franchises. And they did a really good job of managing expectations. In other words, they gave my client during validation examples of strong performers in the system as well as underperformers. And my client knew why they weren't doing well going into it. And that was a big difference because there were other concepts that he looked at where the franchisor says, hey, validation is really great. You're going to love what you hear. And when he didn't love what he heard, it came as a surprise. So that was kind of important, being able to manage those expectations. So in that sense, the franchise development went really well for him. In terms of, you know, the type of professional background that this business is going to require, it really requires somebody to be a general manager. And that was a really great alignment for my client. He had trained for at least three quarters of his career to be exactly that. So, you know, being in finance helps, knowing how to budget, tracking financials really helps. Having an operational background helps too. The one thing that David felt like that was missing from his skill set was sales and marketing. So every bit of exposure to sales process helps when getting into the business, but David just acknowledged that he didn't have a whole lot of it, and it took him a while to ramp up. There were some things about ERS where his reality was a little bit different than what was presented to him. Specifically the amount of investment that was required. David estimates that so far he's put down more than double what was expected. And part of that is attributable to the market specifics in Austin. Wage rates here are higher. Facility lease rates are very high in the commercial market. We've got a very tight market there. And ERS, when he got into the business, ERS gave him a timeline to stick to. And in retrospect, David wished that he had taken more time to find the right people rather than just sticking to a timeline for the sake of doing exactly that. He said he looked back, he had started with the wrong people and had to get rid of them within the first 6 months. And he felt like that ERS kept forcing deadlines on him that were just arbitrary, just to stick to the plan, rather than finding the right people. And if we can let the deadlines wiggle a little bit because of that, he feels like it would have been more beneficial. He also noted that this is a bit of a blue-collar business. In other words, it helps if you are a white-collar with a blue-collar mindset. So if you're uncomfortable being in smoky houses, it's not for you. If you cannot adjust to an industrial atmosphere and mindset, it's not for you. You're not going to enjoy it a whole lot. So those are some of the things that that you know my client said, hey, this is these are the things that really people need to know about getting into this business. Now, he's in it now. His revenue is growing. He's actually turned into a different client of mine. I'm helping him with my I'm helping him build out his IT infrastructure with my IT business. Some of you know that I do that as well. So we remain in contact, and he's kind of gotten through the grind phase of the business, and the revenue is growing. He's got the right people on board, but it took a little while to figure that out, and I think that's true of any solid executive model businesses. You've got to have the right people on the bus, and he felt like that if he had worried less about deadlines and more about quality of people, he'd do even better than he is now. So any questions so far about what I've talked about?
Kyle, this is Stacy. Can you, at some point, what is your 60-second presentation? Like when you are showing this to a client in a meeting, how do you start? Like how do you position it? And how do you, like what kind of verbiage do you use to actually first present the concept?
I present this as a business that's essentially B2B. And that kind of goes back to Harriet, you know, what are the differentiators between this and a cell phone repair business? Is CPR, something like CPR is essentially a B2C where you've got a location and you've got advertising and customers are coming in and they're getting their little cell phones repaired. ERS is a B2B business. So you're developing relationships with insurance adjusters and contractors, and developing a team of people in a small commercial space, to develop revenue streams that are based on insurance payouts. So we know that the money is there. And so that disasters happen, and when they do, there's money to be made. There's money allocated to get it repaired. And so these are revenue streams that you can pick up as long as you can get in front of the adjusters who are aware of your existence and know that you're going to do good work. So I come right out of the gate with what are the key success factors in this business? And, it's on me to make sure that the candidate is going to have a general management mindset and an ability to get out there and network with people. And I met my candidate originally when he was networking at a place where I do co-working. And I noticed that, he could work the room very easily, and he was very much interested in developing relationships, including with me. And he asked a lot of smart questions when we first met. And those questions led to him becoming a client. And I thought, well, given that, I think that you would do really well in this kind of business. And sure enough, he's out there doing it now. He admittedly did not have a whole lot of sales skills, but he had a really easygoing personality, and he came across as really smart and competent and articulate. So we both felt like that he didn't have a sales background, but he could do this business. He was naturally inclined to be out there developing relationships.
Hey, Kyle, this is Boynton Weeks in New Jersey. Great presentation, by the way.
Thank you.
Just wondering, what is the physical, plant or facility piece of it look like? I mean, I don't think this is a home-based business, but I'm guessing it's a small, commercial or industrial facility where the repairs are taking place and the technicians report in to actually do the work.
That's right. So you're going to operate out of, basically a non-retail commercial space. So you know, it's going to be sort of an office industrial type facility. It needs to be a couple thousand square feet. You're going to need a box truck. And it is the place where the office is located. The workers are going to check in. All the work is done. It's not a home-based business, but it is also not going to have the high build-out and rents of Class A retail either.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And is the franchisee doing repairs and things like that, or is he strictly going B2B, developing the contracts with the independent adjusters, public adjusters, and so forth? Or is it a combination of?
I think that depending on the owner's level of comfort with various roles, certainly the owner is expected to be out there developing relationships. That's really important. The owner should also expect to be hands-on in day-to-day management of the team and the business, not necessarily involved in carrying, equipment or actually doing the fixes. Although, my client said that it took for him some adjusting to, he wanted to be in there, roll up his sleeves and help out with the teams. And, he donned the uniform, which is basically a black uniform, and also noted that he found it strange that he got some comments that, from somebody when he showed up saying, "Oh, look, here's the truck driver," when actually he was the owner, but he was dressed like the truck driver. David chose to be hands-on in the beginning just to understand the business a little bit. And you can't afraid to get a little bit dirty, but you should be hiring technicians to get the bulk of the manual work done.
Okay, thank you.
And, for today, I've been also focusing on things that you may not see in the 2-minute drill. Obviously there's, some information that we already have at hand, including the investment range and, just some statistics on the business. Overall, I found that that ERS presents really well in the franchise development and at Discovery Day. And it impressed a guy like this who is, in management at Dell, Princeton MBA kind of guy. Definitely a business savvy person who looked at this and said, "Yes, this is the right business." Let's see. What other questions can I address? Harriet, did I accurately answer your question to your satisfaction?
Yes, you did. I'm curious, with your client, he's been in business for a year now, is that correct?
That's about a year and a half.
Year and a half, okay. Can you gauge what percentage of his business he's been able to generate directly from insurance, bill directly to the insurance companies versus working with contractors, restoration contractors, where he's a sub and has to wait for them to pay him?
In the beginning, he realized that the development of relationships with adjusters was going to take time. And he sought to jumpstart the revenue by going as a contract route. Now, I don't know the percentage of revenue. I'm not privy to that information. But I do know that he started out actually being a sub for another disaster restoration company that we all have worked with, the big one. But he found that it wasn't reliable, that they had a lot of relationships that were already established with subcontractors, so he had to sort of elbow his way to the table to get a piece of that pie. They had the ability, the super basically had the ability to do the work themselves if they needed to. So sometimes subcontract work was not available. And the margins were kind of thin on that. versus being, you know, the primary, being the sub. Just it helped a little bit, but as soon as he started developing relationships with adjusters, he moved away from the subcontract work.
Does ERS itself have any preferred vendor relationships with any of the major insurance companies?
Not sure. It was my impression from David that he was really kind of on his own to develop that. And understanding the nature and culture of the business environment here in Central Texas doesn't surprise me a bit.
Okay. Lastly, what are they going to hear from franchisees, including your guy, as to what kind of income can be done with this business and within what kind of time frame?
It's definitely designed to turn out a six-figure income over time. The gross margins are very high in validation. We're looking at, you know, some of the better players are doing, you know, a quarter million or more, a half a million or more in gross margin. The fixed costs are pretty modest, so that lets a lot drop to the bottom line potentially. But it is key, you know, nothing's guaranteed, of course, and it's key that you develop relationships and do good work and follow up on it. But it definitely has a very high, you know, one of the big appeals of this is for somebody who's coming out of a corporate environment who's used to making a lot of money. This has the potential to replace and exceed a very high corporate income.
Thank you.
But it will take a couple of years. It's not overnight at all, and they present it as such.
This is Carl Gerhardt. Could you address the territory in terms of size of market, any particular demographics that are important, be it population, business count, or perhaps type of business? Is manufacturing better than a heavy office environment type of area? How do you determine the market potential and size needed to support one unit?
Generally speaking, they look at about 1.5 million people as a territory. You can imagine that there's going to be businesses of all types in there. I hadn't really seen anything that indicated that they were targeting specific business counts or industries, but rather just looking at a really large territory where there was so much business in there to pick up, that, you know, it was presented with a great opportunity to succeed.
Okay, thanks.
You bet. Something that I'd like to point out that my client, what was he comparing against? He was looking at CPR. He was also looking at Renaissance. He was also looking at 18-8. And interestingly enough, 18-8 was a real serious contender. It was a very attractive alternative to ERS in my client's mind. But ultimately, ERS won the day. Let's see. What else? Any other questions or anything I can clarify?
Anything else for Kyle before we call it a day?
Kyle, they represent themselves as being able to restore a very large, wide range of equipment. Do they have support for technicians when they hit something they haven't repaired?
I don't know the answer to that. My impression has been that there hasn't been anything that they couldn't repair. thus far. And when you focus on electronics, you know, generally there's it's a pretty set means of, well, you know, how do you repair this type of thing? It's really swapping out components. But I don't know the answer to that specifically.
And the ideal tech, they said, is a TV repair person, somebody that has that kind of repair background?
Yeah, a TV repair is good because televisions are going to be generally one of the more difficult things to repair. You know, modern TVs are, you know, part computer, part television, and have a lot of, you know, part radio, have a lot of different components in there that, you know, most other electronic devices are going to be a subset of those you'd find in a TV.
Thank you.
Kyle, this is Ken Danielson from Syracuse, New York. My question is with regard to the insurance guys, you know, electronics changes about every 18 months and reduces in cost and capability. Are there the insurance guys excited about getting things repaired, or are they just looking at replacing it because it's just easier to get a new one and have more features and capability?
Yes, Moore's Law. Technology doubles itself in capability every 18 months. Insurance adjusters look at this from what is the replacement cost versus the repair cost. So for them, it's really a bottom line. And my client David had mentioned this, you know, because I asked him, why not just replace it? And he's like there's many cases where we can go in and do a restoration that is less than the replacement. And insurance adjusters really don't take Moore's Law into account. And many people who have businesses already depreciate electronics on a straight line 3-year to zero value basis. So, you know, if they've been, you know, that's to say that you roll in there and an 8-year-old computer got damaged, well, that ain't worth it, obviously. But most of the time, people who are doing spending appropriately on electronics are not holding on to computers for 8 years. They might have one that's, you know, 1 to 2 to 3 years old, and in many cases, it is cheaper to do a restoration than a replacement.
Yeah, thank you. One more question with regard to, you know, the insurance things. Is it sort of feast and famine? You know, I guess I don't know the amount of restorations that are going on, but seems like, you know, you might get a bunch and then it might be nothing for a little while and then a bunch. Is that something that the client would need to expect?
The indications I've gotten from my client were that it was not feast or famine. It was pretty steady. In fact, he had pulled statistics on the types and the scale of disasters that occur in the territory in some of the counties that he works in, and it's pretty consistent. And by and large, especially in businesses, but also in residences too, people are required to be insured. So the money's there, and you know, stuff happens. That's the rated G version of you know, what happens in life. Things happen, and so it hasn't been feast or famine. The famine occurs when you don't develop relationships. So it's really on you, as the owner, to make sure that you're out in front of the adjusters, because they're busy. They're doing things all the time. You know, to be successful in this business, you got to be out there making those relationships. There's money to be had. You just got to be in the front, in front of them. Any other questions about ERS? I think it's a great business. I wish that I had more territories to sell, but David bought all of them. I'm not complaining about that at all. I think it's a great business for the right person. Definitely an Achiever emulator is going to be a good fit. Somebody with good management skills who isn't afraid to get their hands a little bit dirty and deal in an industrial environment. Somebody with finance and budget knowledge and the ability to develop relationships. So, in short, that's what makes a great ERS candidate.
Great. Any other questions for Kyle before we wrap up? Okay, I guess not. Well, thank you so much, Kyle, for leading the call today. And I'll be posting this on FranConnect.
Okay. Well, it's definitely been a pleasure. You know, if you've got anybody has any follow-up questions and they that they want to get addressed, you know, I'll have my email, kyled@frannet.com. I'm happy to address them.
Thanks, Kyle. Have a great weekend,
Kyle.
Everybody.
All right. Y'all take care.